Steering the Craft, a 21st Century Guide to Sailing the Sea of Story by Ursula K. Le Guin. D.B. 83047. Copyright 1998 by Ursula K. Le Guin. Read by Jill Ferris. This book contains 141 pages. Approximate reading time, 5 hours, 15 minutes. This book contains markers allowing direct access to, at level 1, the table of contents, introduction, chapters, appendix, and glossary, and, at level 2, to the exercises. Library of Congress Annotation. An award-winning author provides a guide to the craft of writing. In 10 chapters, Le Guin addresses the fundamental components of narrative, includes examples from Global Canon, commentary from Le Guin, and writing exercises, which may be conducted solo or in a group. Some Strong Language, 1998. From the book jacket, a modernized new edition of an essential guide to the writing craft, presented by a brilliant practitioner of the art. Completely revised and rewritten to address the challenges and opportunities of the modern era, this handbook is a short, deceptively simple guide to the craft of writing. The 10 chapters shed light on the most fundamental components of narrative, from the sound of language to sentence construction to point of view. Each chapter combines illustrative examples from the Global Canon with Ursula Le Guin's own witty commentary and an exercise that the writer can do solo or in a group. Le Guin also offers a comprehensive guide to working in writing groups, both actual and online. Masterly and concise, Steering the Craft deserves a place on every writer's shelf. About the author. Over the course of her career, Ursula K. Le Guin has published more than 60 books of fiction, fantasy, children's literature, poetry, drama, criticism, and translation. She is the winner of many awards, including the Penn Malamud Award and the National Book Foundation Medal for Distinguished Contribution to American Letters. Other books by Ursula K. Le Guin. Fiction: A Wizard of Earthsea, The Left Hand of Darkness, The Tombs of Atuan, The Lath of Heaven, The Farthest Shore, The Dispossessed. The word for world is forest. Very Far Away from Anywhere Else. Malafrena, The Beginning Place, The Eye of the Heron, Always Coming Home, Sea Road, Tahanu, The Telling, Four Ways to Forgiveness, Unlocking the Air, Tales from Earthsea, The Other Wind, Gifts, Voices, Powers, Lavinia, Poetry, Wild Angels, Walking in Cornwall, Chapbook, Chilai and Telissos, with Theodora Kroeber, Chapbook, Hard Words, In the Red Zone, with Hank Pander, Chapbook, Wild Oats and Fireweed, No Boats, Chapbook, Blue Moon over Thurmond Street, Going Out with Peacocks, 60-odd, Incredible Good Fortune, Finding My Elegy. Translation, Lao Tzu, Tao Te Ching. Selected Poems of Gabriela Mistral. Steering the Craft, a 21st Century Guide to Sailing the Sea of story. Contents. Introduction, page Roman 9. 1. The sound of your writing, page 1. 2. Punctuation and grammar, page 11. 3. Sentence length and complex syntax, page 20. 4. Repetition, page 36. 5. Adjectives and adverbs, page 43. 6. Verbs, person and tense, page 47. 7. Point of view and voice, page 61. 8. Changing point of view, page 87. 9. Indirect narration, or what tells, page 94. 10. Crowding and leaping, page 117. Appendix, the peer group workshop, page 127. Glossary, page 136. Exercises, including 1. Being gorgeous, page 8. 2. Am I Sarah Magu, page 18. 3. Short and long, page 32. 4. Again and again and again, page 41. 5. Chastity, page 45. 6. The old woman, page 58. 7. Points of view, page 71. 8. Changing voices, page 89. 9. Telling its slant, page 97. 10. A terrible thing to do, page 124. Reader's note, footnotes found in the print edition are located where referenced in the text. End of reader's note. Introduction. This book. This is a handbook for storytellers, writers of narrative prose. I want to say up front, it is not a book for beginners. It's meant for people who have already worked hard at their writing. 15 or more years ago, I was getting students in my workshops who were serious, talented writers, yet were afraid of semicolons and likely to confuse a point of view with a scenic vista. They needed to learn technique, to work on their craft, to get some navigational skills before they took the boat out across the Pacific. So, in 1996, I developed a workshop called Steering the Craft, focused on the glamorous aspects of writing, the really sexy stuff, punctuation, sentence length, grammar. That 5-day workshop drew 14 intrepid writers, willing to face any semicolon and tame any verb tense. Their input and feedback was invaluable to me. Using my notes and their responses, I turned the workshop into a book, a self-guided set of discussion topics and exercises for a writer or a small group. Carrying on the title metaphor, I called them The Lone Navigator and The Mutinous Crew. Steering the Craft was published in 1998. It met with an enthusiastic reception and sold steadily for about 10 years. By then, both writing and publishing were changing so fast that I began to think about updating the book. I ended up rewriting it from stem to stern. It's still aimed at story writers who seek thought, discussion, and practice in the fundamentals of narrative prose. The sound of it, punctuation, syntax, the sentence, the verb, the adjective. Voice and point of view, direction and indirection. what's included, and what's left out. Each chapter includes a discussion of the topic, examples of it from good writers, and exercises offering the reader guidance in avoiding pitfalls, practice and control, and a sense of the pleasure of writing, of playing the real great word games. All the material has been rethought, made clearer, more accurate, and more useful to writers of the 21st century. The exercise has profited from a great deal of feedback from users of the book, reporting on which ones worked and which didn't, on the clarity or confusingness of directions, and so on. Peer group workshops are now so important to so many writers that I enlarged my discussion of them and suggestions for how to make them work, and included more about online groups. Our schools now often teach little of an essential and once common knowledge, the vocabulary of grammar, the tech speak of language and writing. Words such as subject, predicate, object, or adjective and adverb, or past tense and past perfect tense, are half understood by or wholly unfamiliar to many. Yet they're the names of the writer's tools. They're the words you need when you want to say what's wrong or right in a sentence. A writer who doesn't know them is like a carpenter who doesn't know a hammer from a screwdriver. Hey, Pat, if I use that what's it there with the kind of pointy end, will it get this thing into this piece of wood? In this revision, though I can't do a crash course in English grammar and usage, I urge my writer readers to consider the value of the marvelous tools their language provides and to get truly familiar with them so that they can play with them freely. In the past 20 years, writing itself has begun to be differently understood in many ways, while publishing has been going through overwhelming and bewildering changes. I wanted my book to reflect the risks and chances of sailing the stormy waters of publishing, print and electronic, in this day and age, while never losing sight of the pole stars of the art of storytelling, how prose works, and how a story moves. There's no sea chart for a boat in a hurricane, but there are still some basic ways to make her seaworthy and keep her from capsizing, going to pieces, or hitting an iceberg. The Lone Navigator and the Mutinous Crew. Collaborative workshops and writers' peer groups are good inventions. They put the writer into a community of people all working at the same art, the kind of group musicians and painters and dancers have always had. A good peer group offers mutual encouragement, amicable competition, stimulating discussion, practice in criticism, and support in difficulty. If you want to and are able to join a group, do so. If you long for the stimulus of working with other writers but can't find or attend a local group, look into the many possibilities of forming or joining one on the Internet. You might form a virtual mutinous crew using this book together via email. But if it doesn't work out, don't feel cheated or defeated. You can attend many writing workshops led by famous writers or be a member of many peer groups and yet get no closer to finding your own voice as a writer than you might do working alone in silence. Ultimately, you write alone. And ultimately, you and you alone can judge your work. The judgment that a work is complete, this is what I meant to do and I stand by it, can come only from the writer. And it can be made rightly only by a writer who's learned to read her own work. Group criticism is great training for self-criticism, But until quite recently, no writer had that training. And yet they learned what they needed. They learned it by doing it. The aim. This is essentially a workbook. The exercises are consciousness raisers. Their aim is to clarify and intensify your awareness of certain elements of prose writing and certain techniques and modes of storytelling. Once we're keenly and clearly aware of these elements of our craft, we can use and practice them until, the point of all the practice, we don't have to think about them consciously at all, because they have become skills. A skill is something you know how to do. Skill in writing frees you to write what you want to write. It may also show you what you want to write. Craft enables art. There's luck in art, and there's the gift. You can't earn that. But you can learn skill. You can earn it. You can learn to deserve your gift. I'm not going to discuss writing as self-expression, as therapy, or as a spiritual adventure. It can be these things. But first of all, and in the end too, it is an art, a craft, a making. And that is the joy of it. To make something well is to give yourself to it, to seek wholeness, to follow spirit. To learn to make something well can take your whole life. It's worth it. Storytelling. All the exercises are concerned with the basic elements of narrative, how a story is told, what moves and what clogs it, starting right down on the level of the elements of language. The topics are the sound of language, punctuation, syntax, the narrative sentence and paragraph, rhythm and repetition, adjectives and adverbs, tense and person of the verb, voice and point of view, implicit narration, imparting information, crowding, leaping, focus, and control. As far as the exercises are concerned, it doesn't matter whether you write fiction or nonfiction. Narrative is narrative. Most writing classes or courses in school and college focus on expository writing, giving information, explaining. They talk about expressing ideas, but not about storytelling. Some of the techniques and values of expository writing are irrelevant and even problematic in narrative writing. Training in the elaborately irresponsible language of bureaucracy or the artificially impersonal language of technology and science can tongue-tie a storyteller. Certain problems may be specific to memoir or fiction, and I'll mention those I'm aware of, but in general, all storytellers work pretty much the same way, with the same box of tools. Since narrative is what this is all about, try to make each exercise not a static scene, but the account of an act or action, something happening. It doesn't have to be bang-pow action. It might be a journey down a supermarket aisle or some thoughts going on inside a head. What it has to do is move, end up in a different place from where it started. That's what narrative does. It goes. It moves. Story is change. Suggestions for using the exercises. Think about the directions for using each exercise a bit before you start writing. They may not be quite as simple as they look. Following them will make the exercise useful. If you and this book are alone together, I suggest that you work through it methodically, doing the exercises in order. When you've worked on an exercise till you're more or less satisfied with it, put it away and forbid yourself to look at it again for a while. One of the few things most writers agree on is that we can't trust our judgment on our own freshly written work. To see its faults and virtues, we need to look at it after a real interval, a day or two at least. Then reread your piece with a friendly, hopeful, critical eye, with revision in mind. If I offer specific suggestions for criticism regarding the exercise, use them now. Read the piece aloud to yourself, since speaking and hearing it will show up awkward bits and faults in the rhythm and can help you make dialogue natural and lively. In general, look for what's wordy, ugly, unclear, unnecessary, preachy, careless, what breaks the pace, what doesn't work. Look for what does work and admire it and see if you can bring it out even better. If you're part of a mutinous crew, I recommend that you follow the procedure outlined in the appendix, the peer group workshop. All my suggestions for group work are based on this procedure. I've used it in all the workshops I've led and all the peer groups I've belonged to. It works. Exercise pieces don't have to be highly finished. They don't have to be deathless literature. You can learn a lot by revising them. If they lead you on toward something bigger, that's grand. But to be successful as exercises, all they have to do is what the directions say to do. Most will be very short, a paragraph, a page or so. If you're working in a group and reading your pieces aloud, brevity is a necessity. And writing to a short, set length is an excellent discipline in itself. Of course, your piece can grow longer later if it leads you into something interesting. My workshoppers told me it would be helpful if I suggested a subject or even a specific storyline or situation for each exercise. I provide these suggestions, but you don't have to use them. They're for those who don't want to sit around inventing a universe in order to write an exercise. If you're working in a group, you might choose to write some of the exercises during the meeting. After discussion of the exercise, each person sets to work on it. Silence. Scribble, scribble, scribble. Half an hour is the absolute time limit. Then, each one in turn reads their piece aloud, hot off the paper. The pressure often brings out excellent and surprising writing. In-class writing is tremendously useful for people who aren't used to producing under pressure and think they can't do it. They can. The lone navigator can get much the same effect by setting a half-hour time limit. Each topical section introduces some matters to think or talk about, which the lone navigator can mull over at leisure, or which might help get a discussion going in a group. Most chapters include brief examples of various techniques taken from notably crafty writers. Do try reading them aloud, in the group, or to yourself. Don't be afraid of reading aloud alone. You'll only feel silly for a minute, and what you learn from reading aloud can last a lifetime. The examples aren't meant to influence your approach to the exercise, only to show a variety of approaches to the technical problem in question. If, later on, you want to try imitating one or another of them, do so. Students of composition and painting deliberately imitate great works of music and art as part of their training. The cult of originality led writing teachers to treat imitation as if it were despicable. By now, confused by the careless borrowing common on the Internet, a lot of writers don't know the difference between plagiarism, which is despicable, and imitation, which is useful. Intention matters. If you try to pass it off as your own, that's plagiarism. But if you put your name on a paragraph in the style of a published author, it's just an exercise. Written seriously, not as parody or pastiche, it can be a demanding and revealing exercise. I talk about this a little more on page 93. Most of the examples quoted in the book are taken from older works of fiction because permission to quote from contemporary works is often expensive or unavailable, and because I love and am familiar with these older books. A lot of people have been scared away from the classics by inadequate teachers, or led to believe that writers learn only from their contemporaries. A writer who wants to write good stuff needs to read great stuff. If you don't read widely, or read only writers in fashion at the moment, you'll have a limited idea of what can be done with the English language. The examples and the suggestions for further reading make good subjects for group discussion or for private study. What is this writer doing? How is she doing it? Why is she doing it? Do I like it? Finding other examples, bringing them to the group, discussing them, could be profitable to everybody in the crew. And the lone navigator may find guides, companions, dear friends among the writers who have also sailed these seas and found their way through the reefs and shoals. Note, I use as little technical language as possible, but every craft needs its jargon. So I've appended a small glossary of technical or fancy terms. The first time I use such words, I mark them with an asterisk.